Is there a war on natural remedies? Are natural remedies that might cure various diseases being kept from us because big industry, big pharma, can't make a profit on them? We'll get into that topic with consumer advocate, author, investigator, and education health journalist Bill Sardi right after this on Coast to Coast AM. Bill Sardi is a consumer advocate, an author, a researcher, investigator, health journalist who's been working for years to help people understand sometimes complex and perplexing topics about health and nutrition. He also is the creator of a resveratrol-based supplement called Longevinex that we'll talk about in the next hour. But he joins us now to talk about the larger issue of whether or not there's bias within the medical establishment against natural products. Bill, good to have you on the show.
Thank you, George, and certainly there is. I like to tell audiences like yours, the biological action of every prescription drug can be duplicated with dietary supplements that you can find in a local health food store that work better, safer, and, well, more economically. And we just need someone to sort that out and, of course, translate it for us. Which drugs do I take that I could actually get a better effect and not all the cost and so on? I think there's a lot of crossed wires here because people are confused. Insurance pays for the drugs and not the supplements, but they don't realize often that the out-of-pocket cost, the copay for these drugs is higher than you would pay for a supplement that does the very same thing in a much more safer and natural way.
And well, so, we're going to get into that. We're going to go down a list of that those kinds of examples in the course of the next couple of hours. I want to start with you, though, Bill, just to, as a way of background. You're not a doctor. You're not trained medically, right?
I am a medical journalist. I like to call myself a health journalist because I want to promote health, not medicine. I have had about 15 years of writing health books and tackling some interesting subjects along the way that other journalists haven't address, like sudden infant death syndrome and so on. And I have little books about all those. And of course, there's something wrong with our medical system because a dumb Italian like me gets people on the internet or on the phone and somehow is able to sort things out and point people in directions, and they find remedies that they haven't been able to find in 10 or 15 years with conventional medicine. And these include things as like migraine headaches, all the way up to real answers for the big things like cancer and heart disease and so on. And so there's something wrong here. I don't pin any badges on myself. I do a lot of homework. I like to share information. We don't want to play doctor. But something is not happening where the public is getting the real information that they need. And, of course, they're not getting well. That's the big problem. And we know the problems in modern medicine. It is a disease treatment system. It's not a health promotion system. And so that's something that I've kind of focused on in my time. I am 67 years old. I don't take any medicines. I can still skip to the end of the block and back on my toes. I have an 8-year-old son, and I like to say, you know, that I'm in good health. That doesn't mean perfect health because you have challenges as you go along. But certainly, I can tell you that this leading a life without prescription medicines is certainly much better than taking prescription medicines. Now, how do we get Americans to go along with that idea? See if I can convince a few this evening.
Well, we will. Let's start with sort of the macro picture. And I wanted to use this hour to sort of look at the nexus between the FDA, FTC, and other regulatory agencies, supposed regulatory agencies, and the companies they're supposed to regulate. As a way to get into that, I want to reference an email that I got earlier this evening from one of our listeners who is a medical researcher. And he says, this guy that's coming on your show is full of baloney. We in the medical research industry would shout to the high heavens if we found something that would cure XYZ disease. There's no way they could stifle it. We would run to the press. We would shout it from the highest mountaintop. If I found a cure, I'd tell everyone about it. Address that. I mean, this guy makes a good point that in some ways, it's hard to believe that dedicated medical researchers, doctors, people who dedicate their lives to making our health better would go along with something like this.
Let's take Lester Morrison, a full cardiologist at Loma Linda University in the 1970s. He cured heart disease before the first statin cholesterol-lowering drug. He wrote a full book about this, which a major publisher published. He published six different papers at the time showing that the mortality rate with a simple remedy that you can go buy at a health food store today totally vanquished arterial disease, coronary artery disease, and actually lowered mortality. He did the studies in animals, followed up by doing it in humans. He gave even case presentations. The remedy for heart disease was chondroitin sulfate. Now, we usually hear of glucosamine and chondroitin in relationship to a supplement used for arthritis, but just the chondroitin sulfate by itself was used, and he used it in fairly high dose, 5,000 milligrams. You don't need to use it that high a dose, but that's what he used. He took patients who we call huffers and puffers, who were just simply on oxygen tanks, had crushing angina, chest pain, and certainly all the other problems of hypertension and so on, and he just gave them chondroitin sulfate. And over time, they were out running, they had no angina. He gives all the case presentations. So there's plenty of evidence if you want to go dig it up. Modern medicine has forgot about this man, Lester Morrison. You can go online. The man who cured heart disease. I'm going to refer everybody tonight to things they can find online. My online paper, which you can find, The Man Who Cured Heart Disease by Bill Sardi. And it'll tell you the whole story, give you the references, and click you through so that you can read some of the references and the abstracts from the National Library of Medicine. Now, I actually have another report of a man, The Man Who Shouldn't Be Alive. You can look up that report. And it's a man who actually did use chondroitin sulfate, had three heart attacks, was an insulin-dependent diabetic who's no longer insulin-dependent. Modern medicine tells you once you're on insulin, you'll never get off. And the effects of his three heart attacks was completely erased. They did an electrocardiogram. They couldn't believe it. They had to go back and do it again. And they thought they had the wrong patient or somehow mixed his record and his electrocardiogram with someone else's. He shows no effects of a heart attack today. That is because chondroitin sulfate takes the scar tissue in the heart, takes the endothelium, the smooth lining of the arteries that then feed the heart. There are four coronary arteries that mainly feed the heart. And it makes those smooth again and young, just like you were 20 years old. And that's what chondroitin does. Now, vitamin C is additive to that, so on. And all of that was documented. You can go look up my articles on this. My whole point is to scientifically reference these so that critics and skeptics will say. Now, I think this man, whoever this health researcher is not disingenuous. I think they're just not exposed to this. They certainly don't hear about it in medical school. And so to take such a disease as heart disease and to say there is a cure, and that's a big word to use, and yet this was conclusively shown, and we've recommended it to a lot of people over time. I don't play doctor. I push pencils and things that people say, look, jot that down. And go check it out yourself. So the issue is that you just need to be exposed to this information. Let's take a look and see what they've done for heart disease with statin drugs. Statin drugs is the main mantra of modern medicine. It's the main thing is to lower cholesterol, and we do not see a lowering of the mortality rate with cholesterol drugs. In fact, John Abramson is a Harvard doctor, wrote Overdosed America, took the top 10 leading studies of statin drugs where they lower cholesterol. It did not lower mortality. And, your doctor will look at you right in the eye and he'll tell you, if you don't take this statin drug, you're going to die of a heart attack. But statin drugs do not prevent mortal heart attacks. They prevent non-mortal heart attacks. You need to look at the literature from the drugs in the fine print and you'll see that they admit this. And one out of 70 high-risk statin users, one out of 200 healthy users will avert a non-mortal heart attack over a five-year period. Now, that's a pretty small number to say that that is an FDA-approved, safe, and effective drug, and they'll tell you that the adverse reaction rate, about 3% is small next to the effectiveness of 30% reduction in heart attacks, which is a false number. That's a relative number. On a hard number, it's about a 3% reduction in non-mortal heart attacks, and the actual side effect rate is much higher. Most of the people have side effects. Stop taking the statins, and about 12% of the people have elevated liver enzymes. If we had a dietary supplement that had that rate of elevated liver enzymes, that means liver toxicity, that it would be taken off the market. So this kind of slant you get from, and I think they're well-meaning, they just are not exposed to anything. They've never seriously examined anything outside their own arena.
Well, give me give me sort of a laundry list of how it works. Let's say some researcher comes up with some amazing cure for heart disease or cancer. He wants to tell the world about it. The example you just used, the guy wrote a book. How then is it stifled? How is it that it doesn't get out to all the rest of us?
Well, let's take resveratrol, which I will get into the second hour here. But as everyone recalls, there was a 60 Minutes program in the early 1990s about red wine and the French and the French paradox. They were eating more cholesterol and fat. Their heart disease mortality rate, the coronary artery disease, was 90 per 100,000, and ours was 240 per 100,000. We were using the statin drugs full force, and certainly this wasn't getting us anywhere. The French were using their red wine. That's the only factor they could come out with. And, of course, we still have no medicine that works as well as red wine, except for the problem of once we talk about it, it gives license for people mistakenly. They think it gives them license to overconsume. So, but the French themselves actually are drinking about 5 glasses of red wine a day, which is at the level of inebriation, which I certainly don't promote. But we don't have anything better than that. And of course, I went off onto a tangent. Your listeners will hear this a few years ago in trying to take the alcohol out and take the wine solids and make a pill, a red wine pill, to treat heart disease. But let's look at that subject, because this came up in 2004 when researchers were saying resveratrol, the key molecule, had been found. It could be an anti-aging pill. But the main thrust of this was heart disease. So in the 8 years since 2004, resveratrol pills became very widely available in the United States. There's over 350 brands now. Do we have one study with humans with a resveratrol pill and heart disease? No. They shun it. They ignore it. A professor at Brown University wants to know why. He writes an article, slow in coming, he says. What, there's no human study to look at this at all, so they just ignore it and shun it. Modern medicine has a program, and whatever nature does, it's found and discovered and reported in medical journals. And then its science's project is to alter that molecule, that natural molecule. This is what we did. We took foxglove and we made it into digitalis, which is used for heart disease. And what happens is that they're going to make an analog, they call it. That means a man-made version, and then try to make $1 zillion off of it because they can now hold a patent on it. And my job as a health journalist is to go back and decipher all this and get through the language of the medicalese that we're presented with and show people that really all of that could be duplicated with just something they started and found from nature that actually still works better. And that's the problem here. We have a big story here in the last week or so, and it's Bloomberg News who broke it, not the National Institutes of Health or anyone else, and that was that it could be a prescription drug, a 10-cent prescription drug, metformin. It's called Glucophage, treats diabetes, maybe the most profound cancer remedy. We don't have a cancer preventive drug today. And this may really prevent cancer. It's also known as an anti-aging drug. Well, you go to the report I wrote about this, and it tries to, well, what else could we use? Because we got to go to the doctor to get a prescription for metformin. He's not likely to prescribe it for cancer, and so you're not likely to even get it. What could you use in lieu of that? It could be a resveratrol pill. It's similar to the same properties, actually works better, far better than the metformin drug. It's not prescription. And so far, thousands of Americans have been using resveratrol pills, and certainly our first concern is there any major side effects? And we don't see them. Now, if you get up in high doses, I'll talk to you about staying away from high doses of resveratrol. But in regard to a major outbreak of some problem, liver toxicity or something, we don't see it. So people can be free to try that and see if it works for them. And how in the world does resveratrol work superior, let's say, to any drug?
I'll tell you what, Bill, I want to save that for the next hour. I want to speak more in the macro sense.
You bet.
Help me go back to this, the mechanism that is used to stifle a cure. Is it just boiled down to big pharma funding the research or not funding the research? Is it the fact that anything that's natural can't be patented, and so therefore they can't make money and they try to discredit it?
That's all part of it. Certainly in the metformin example, the Bloomberg News people showed that as soon as they became aware that the metformin patent had expired, that the drug companies didn't cooperate with any of the studies. So it's all left on the National Institutes of Health to carry the ball. And so we just don't see it happen. And of course, we've got other diseases the same way, and what we end up with is no sponsored studies, and so the NIH, National Institutes of Health, has to carry the water here. And sometimes they're bought off and influenced by certainly getting rich themselves or protecting our drug market. The United States is the biggest drug pusher going. We certainly are the leader in pharmaceuticals. They want to keep us that way. And so this is what happens, and so we just don't find out. Actually, everything today is being pushed to the highest cost remedies. Let me give you one. Doctors found out that if you do gastric bypass surgery, now they have what they call bariatrics. Bariatric doctors help people that are morbidly obese, and they do gastric bypass and get the weight off, and they found after they do that, if they had diabetes, it seems to be gone forever so far. That's what they've seen. So now that procedure costs $18,000, and they've got a committee going, and they want to take every diabetic in America, and they want to do that $18,000 operation. Well, I investigated into it, found out it's a bloody procedure. You lose a lot of blood in it, and your iron stores go down. Iron is stored in the liver and the blood, and if your iron level goes down, then your diabetes goes away. So what I interpreted there, and I even sent the researchers with no thank yous from any of them, is that if we just sent people off to have blood donation or even bloodletting, we call it phlebotomy, which is the old George Washington thing. They overdid that with George and killed him. But the issue is that we can reduce the iron load, just give some blood, avoid the $18,000 operation. And in fact, an endocrinologist many years ago took diabetics in over a two-year period, just had them continually donate blood, get their iron levels down, and they were free of diabetes completely. So what I'm giving you is that there are easier ways to get there. They're certainly not as costly. And, of course, we're just bankrupting our medical system many times over, and the people never hear these kinds of remedies.
But big pharma, big medicine will always look for the most expensive option as opposed to something.
And the doctors, of course, are profit-driven here, and so this is why this happens. And so, of course, it lures them in, too.
I guess maybe you're in favor of bringing back leeches?
Well, it's actually been used. Don't think it's so archaic. I mean, Harvard and other big schools medical schools have used this kind of treatment. Bloodletting is used, actually, today for diabetes and cancer and so on in some cases. So don't think it's so archaic that it's been tossed aside completely.
I didn't mean to be too sarcastic.
No,
I'll tell you, Bill, I want to get into this when we come back. And the idea of these conflicting studies, I take vitamin supplements. You know, one week you see vitamin C is great for X, Y, and Z. And the next week, vitamin C doesn't do anything. Vitamin B, D, omega-3s. It seems like every time something comes out that's supposedly good, then another study comes out and it's bad. And I wonder how that mechanism works. I want you to get into that. We'll be back with more Coast to Coast AM. In reference to the caller in the first hour who was mentioning about a show with Gordon Duff, I am told that that was on October 16th. Gordon Duff was George Norrie's guest, and it's a pretty good example of why you might want to become a Coast Insider. You pay pennies a day, and you can listen to a backlog of 1,000 or more shows and listen to it at your convenience. Go back and hear something again. That's a show I'm going to have to check out. Sounds like Gordon Duff had some pretty interesting things to say. We continue our conversation with Bill Sardi about skullduggery in the medical and health fields right after this on Coast to Coast AM. Bill Sardi, help me paint an accurate picture of just how addicted our nation is to pills, to pharmaceuticals. I mean, you read about it. It sounds like we're a nation of pill poppers. We and prescription drugs in particular, they kill us and overdose us. They addict us. It seems like everyone's taking anti-anxiety drugs that often push people over the edge. All this time, we're taking all these pills much more than anywhere in the rest of the world, and they don't really cure anything. Paint that picture in for me.
Seniors are taking about 3 to 5 prescription drugs a day, some of them many more, and we have a thing called polypharmacy where we just treat one drug side effect with another drug and then with another drug. And most people that I come in contact with them, I urge them to try to just get clear of their drugs, medicines for a few days, and see if things don't get better. I can't practice medicine. I can only give them a little guidance. And frequently we hear from them that they do feel better, that they actually, all the things they were complaining about seem to go away. So I think for many people, they don't realize it's the medicines themselves that are causing the problem. Certainly we love pills, and probably I do too, but I take a different variety of them from nature every morning, and it's certainly vitamins, minerals, amino acids, those kind of things are on my plate, none of the prescription drugs. But, you know, I think some of the reliance that we have on medicines is because, well, insurance pays, and it doesn't pay for dietary supplements. And if we could get, of course, dietary supplements paid for, a lot of the cost of medicine would go down, and, of course, the health quotients would go up. We're actually being gamed as a society. They're dialing in a certain level of disease by making sure that the dietary requirements, the dietary daily requirement for certain vitamins and minerals, that is rigged in the daily doses we read, the supplement facts panel in the back of dietary supplements and multivitamins, so that we just don't get enough vitamin D, and therefore our immune system's down and our heart doesn't function right and our muscles don't work correctly, and then we need drugs to fix that. And we're finding there's a vitamin D revolution going on. We've had vitamin D pills for decades. It was discovered in 1922, and medicine has ignored it. And all they've ever told doctors and medical school is, if you get too much vitamin D, you'll overcalcify. Well, you'd have to take 1 million units of vitamin D to do that. That's what the animal studies show. And now we're seeing that vitamin D looks like it's going to fix the common cold. It's certainly going to help with heart disease. It's helping seniors. It helps with muscle tone. They're having fewer falls and so on. Seems to help with your mood, elevates your mood, does so many things. And modern medicine can't stop that train because there's so much good science on it now, and so many Americans becoming convinced that vitamin D is something good. They can even take more. There's not much risk in it. And certainly it's another 10-cent cure because it's very, very inexpensive. And of course, we're seeing a revolution with vitamin D. For everybody interested, the vitamindcouncil.com offers wonderful information. Dr. John Cannell and the Vitamin D Council, a nonprofit group.
You look at the potential benefits of natural remedies, vitamins, things of that sort, compare it to prescription drugs. You don't have people dying from taking vitamin C or vitamin D. You have a heck of a lot of people dying from taking pills. And I wonder if I'm exaggerating to say that we are by far the number one consumer of this stuff.
I keep saying to the antagonists, show me the dead bodies. Just show me the dead bodies. A few years ago, Journal American Medical Association showed about 106,000 Americans die every year from properly used prescription drugs used in hospitals, prescribed by a doctor, administered by a nurse, so there was no misuse. And that's in a hospital. Imagine how many more in the common population at large. So we've got hundreds of thousands dying. Certainly Vioxx comes into mind, this anti-inflammatory drug, which killed thousands of Americans The FDA declared it an FDA-approved drug. They allowed direct-to-consumer advertising on it. They said it was safer than ibuprofen, and then all of a sudden they found it was killing thousands. And, of course, if it wasn't for a whistleblower, David Graham at the FDA would have never found it out. And, of course, it seemed like the drug company seemed to know all this and was keeping it from view, and so that this is the kind of thing that we got into.
What, tell it to me about conflicting studies. I mentioned it sort of going into the break about how, you know, one week we hear vitamin C is great and it seems like there's so much evidence in support of something like that. And then we hear, you got to be careful with this stuff. A conflicting study comes out just to muddy the waters. Is that on purpose?
Some of it seems to be as they design the studies. There's no way that would have worked for that particular instance or thing that they're studying. There's been some negative information about fish oil lately. Again, that's all contrived. There was no study done. It was a compilation of other studies. And one of those studies, fairly big study in the middle of it, used olive oil as a comparison. Wait a minute, you can't take, since there was not much difference between olive oil and fish oil, they declared fish oil wasn't very effective. Wait a minute, olive oil is pretty effective all by itself. So you get these studies skew the numbers. There was no study done. It was just a compilation of already done studies. So they can rig that, select the studies that they want to. It's called a meta-analysis, and then make it look like something wasn't done so well. Of course, the most infamous rigging of a study was when Linus Pauling took intravenous vitamin C and showed that you could get cancer patients to live about 6 months longer. Now, that doesn't sound great to you and I, because we'd like to live a lot longer if we had cancer, but some of the patients were living 2 years and 3 years and continuing on, a great number of them, more than they were doing with the anti-cancer drugs. They didn't even have 6 months survival with those. And so all of this came to attention. Mayo Clinic took it up and did a study using oral vitamin C, which is not absorbed as well, doesn't reach the blood levels, and then said vitamin C doesn't work. Of course, it was rigged. And it took how long? Until just about 5 years ago, when finally the National Institutes of Health researchers admitted that intravenous vitamin C reaches very high concentrations in the blood, goes from becoming an antioxidant to what we call a prooxidant. It promotes hydrogen peroxide. Yeah, that's stuff we use to, you know, clean out wounds and things. Makes hydrogen peroxide in our blood just very transiently, momentarily. And it kills cancer cells, doesn't hurt our normal healthy cells, and it's a very effective remedy against cancer as well as germs, infections, and so on. And, of course, again, that's still underused. We don't see intravenous vitamin C used except for the alternative medicine doctors. And, of course, that's never been corrected in modern medicine. Linus Pauling was correct, and, of course, he was, his theories and ideas were diminished. Of course, he wrote a book in the 1970s, you know, vitamin C and cancer. And, of course, what happened is heart disease dropped down tremendously the year that he wrote the book, because the vitamin C pill sales went way up per capita, and all of a sudden heart disease dropped down considerably. And by the way, you can find that chart showing all that at the Linus Pauling Institute. So you can see some of that. Those connections there. So,
but if as you are saying, a positive study, something like what Linus Pauling puts out, says there are benefits in vitamin C, somebody comes out with a rigged study, a slanted study, where the ground rules are set to get a specific result, it sure suggests that some research scientists are for sale, that you can buy a result.
You can, and sometimes they use an ineffective dose, and more likely too high a toxic dose. We've seen this with vitamin E, and everybody likes to think more is better when it comes to nature things, and they're all safe, but not at any dose. I mean, so we didn't see vitamin E become troublesome, but it seemed to lose its effect as we got up higher in dose. And now we realize why. The researchers all pointing to the fact that we need to balance two types of vitamin E molecules in our diet. One's called tocopherols, one's called tocotrienols. I don't want to get too scientific, but we're going to need to change our multivitamins and everything and include both types of vitamin E, and then we will see a dramatic breakthrough in health. Again, we're not ready to do that because everybody would think we're diluting their multivitamins and get mad. But as soon as the public gets fully educated here, I'm hoping that we balance out the vitamin E molecules in our multivitamins.
It seems kind of counterintuitive. You had mentioned about the insurance companies, have to pay out so much to cover these more expensive remedies that don't remedy anything, and they could pay for much less money for natural cures. Well, why wouldn't they be doing it?
Well, insurance companies maybe make 2% profit. They just get to play with all that money, invest it, and drag out payment to doctors and hospitals, keep the money, invest it, make a little percentage, and then hand it out to the providers of the health care. But you see, if the total amount is larger, if there's more disease and they make 2% of that, that benefits the insurance company. Same thing with the doctors. Well, why wouldn't doctors prescribe more dietary supplements? Because they don't get what's called a drug consult fee. When a doctor sees a patient, he's allowed to charge an office visit. And then if there is a drug prescribed, he gets another fee for a drug consultation. Now, these consultants come in and tell them you want to make another $180,000 a year. Prescribe everybody a drug for something, and then you'll make XYZ amount more money every year because they pay you 50 or 80 or whatever it is, dollars, the insurance pays, for a drug consultation. So one doctor that we ran into was everybody got an antacid for heartburn for no reason at all. And so this is kind of the doctors have a financial incentive. It runs conflict to the patient's best interest. Now imagine if there was some sort of incentive for prescribing vitamins. There is none. The drug companies run this. They influence Congress. And, of course, we don't even see the drugs being bought by Medicare on a bid basis. The only health system that does that that's public is our veterans health system. It's the most ethical, best health care system going, and they do buy their drugs on a bid basis, and they don't overpay for them. But Congress has said that you cannot buy drugs and put them on bid, and therefore they're handing extra profits.
That is outrageous. That kills me every time I hear it. You can't.
It's just the way it is, and Congress has bought off, and this is what we have, and we have what we call a fascist medicine now. Fascist. No one understands that word anymore. It's a World War II word, but we think of somebody, Hitler or Mussolini or somebody. But fascism is when industry controls the regulators, and the regulators then make it a law, for instance, that we all have to get a flu shot, or we have to get the kids have to have vaccines to get in school, or we all have to be taking a statin drug to get our health insurance or life insurance. I have a life insurance policy. The nurse comes, and if your cholesterol's up, she says you have to take a statin drug. So, they mandate it, and so therefore you have to take it. And so then the drug companies don't have any marketing costs, see? And so this is kind of what we call fascism in medicine. And it's why I'm concerned about what we call, I don't like the term, but Obamacare, in the sense that they want to take all the medical records and make them electronic. That's a whole ruse. They want to get into the doctor's records and make sure he's pushing drugs and know exactly what he's doing every minute.
And the doctors are on the take in this. I mean,
well,
they get the kickbacks.
They certainly are. And, it's embarrassing for them, but they're the ones who capitulated to this. They didn't hold themselves at a higher calling and protect the public here. It's obvious, all the way down to scratch pads and pencils they took from the drug companies. Everything possible, they got completely bought off. So that's what's happened.
Talk to me for a couple of minutes about the FDA and the relationship it has with the drug companies. It's supposed to regulate them. It's supposed to oversee them. In some ways, when it comes to natural cures versus pharmaceutical drugs, FDA seems schizophrenic. I mean, on one hand, they seem to want to abolish natural cures. On the other hand, they want to take them over and regulate them and have them only go out by prescription.
We're just waiting for the election to get over, and they calm down their war against dietary supplements, and I'm sure it's just to get it past the election they're going to start it again. And all the prescription drugs, the blockbusters, the multi-billion-dollar drugs, the patents are expiring, so now they want to demonize the dietary supplements, kill them off, get the sales down, make them easy to pick up, make the drug companies buy them. Two major dietary supplement companies have been bought in the past year by drug firms, and then pick them all up and then take and say they're great now that the drug companies have them, because they're producing profits in the 9 to 20% pre-tax profits. This is in the range of a drug company, actually. The sales are growing of dietary supplements. Americans are finding out more about it. The drugs, they're losing their patents, and so this is the whole scheme, is to try and make the dietary supplements into drugs and make them all prescription as they are in Europe. We forget the freedoms we have. If you would like to get ginkgo biloba or bilberry extract or any of these kinds of things in Italy or France or Germany, why, fine, you go to a doctor to get a prescription. That costs you money in front of getting them, and so everything's high cost. And now if you fly to New York and go into a local pharmacy there, you'll frequently find people buying $2,000 and $3,000 and $4,000 and $5,000, even $20,000 of vitamins. They are tourists. They're here from Europe. They can't get those supplements. They don't have the freedom we have. And that's what they're trying to bring here to America, where, and they bring them back home. And of course they use them and give them to their relatives and so on. And we have freedoms that we need to hold on to. The Dietary Supplement Health and Education Act is that freedom. And, of course, there's been two assaults against it, since 1994 when it was approved. They're trying to do it again. They're trying to make the dietary supplements into drugs. They're trying to say that they need to have standards like a drug. And certainly we want high manufacturing standards. That's in place, good manufacturing practices. But they're putting other standards that are onerous. They want some testing done on dietary supplements, which are already safe, like a ginger pill or something like this. And they want them to go through toxicity testing, which would cost so much that you'd have to take it off the market. And then, of course, the drug companies bring it back as a drug, and high-priced, of course.
And the FDA is a willing participant in this process?
Well, they certainly are, because they are the ones who are doing this. They are the ones who are in pushing these very tests that have to be done.
And is this the kind of thing where there's a revolving door between the FDA and the pharmaceutical industry?
Well, there certainly is a revolving door, and of course, books have been written about this, where certain researchers, do some research. Next thing, they're working for the FDA, and next thing, they're working for the drug company. So they do the bidding, and then the revolving door continues. And there have been books written about this, actually. And of course, the FDA is a. I'd like to say that the referee was fair and that we certainly need a referee. I wonder if we didn't even have one, if things would be better. But we have so many deaths that we can attribute to the FDA. Just for fun here for a second, name a drug that killed 50 million people and is still on the market. Everybody think for a minute. Do you know of a drug that killed 50 million people? I'm going to reveal it to you here now. Okay, the drug is aspirin. It was used in the 1918 by Bayer Drug Company. It was the first worldwide marketing of aspirin. They didn't know the dosing. It was actually in little boxes as well as bottles. And there was the scare of the Spanish flu, 1918. People got scared. They were downing aspirin. 50 million people died worldwide. The aspirin killed the people, not the flu. They certainly may have gotten the flu, but what happened was that aspirin depletes vitamin C, it lowered their immune system, and they died like flies. We know that because today if we give a little child who has the flu an aspirin tablet, we tell them not to do it anymore. It's called Reye's syndrome, and we tell them to take Tylenol or something, because a child that doesn't have enough vitamin C given aspirin, the same thing will happen, and they will die when they just had a little flu infection. So, or a virus of any kind with a fever. So we've learned not to break fevers in young children. It's the same thing.
And Bill Sardi, I'm going to need to interrupt you there. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but we're going to need to take a break. I want to get into that statement you made about the effort to demonize supplements, because as you have told me in previous conversations, there are some bad players out there in that industry who've given others a bad name, and I want to talk about that. Then get into the example of resveratrol, what its potential is, and how it's being stifled. Stay with us. Much more to come on Coast to Coast AM.